One of the things that really interests me, Forgotten Civilizations, that's the name, that's the topic, that's the name of the book also that we're going to be talking about. But, you know, ancient civilizations, those kind of things, Steve Quayle talks about some of those, a little different angle to it, but they fascinate me. I hope they do you also. And I think after you listen to our next guest, if you weren't interested before, you will be. Because this guy is big time. I mean, this is not just anybody here talking about these things. Robert Schoch. His last name is spelled S-C-H-O-C-H. RobertSchoch.com is his website. He is a tenured faculty member at Boston University. He has a doctorate in geology and geophysics. He is well known for his research on the Sphinx. Probably best known, I would say. That's probably true, Robert. You can correct me if I'm wrong, about his research about the Sphinx and the age of it and what that relates to. And then underwater civilizations buried off the coast of Japan. He's done a lot of research there. This is a very big time guest on the subject. Very happy to have him. The book is Forgotten Civilization, The Role of Solar Outbursts in Our Past and Future. Robert, it's a pleasure to have you on the Power Hour.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Yes. Why don't you just give a little brief description? Obviously, I gave a little bit of a bio, but tell us about Robert, how you got into this, why you started digging around in the earth all over the place.
Oh, that's a long story, but I'll try to make it relatively short. I've always been interested in ancient civilizations. They fascinated me, ancient Egypt, ancient Greece, ancient Rome when I was a young child. I read, you know, everything from the Bible and talking about ancient civilizations to Plato and Atlantis and the story of this supposedly mythical civilization that was very advanced at a very remote period in time, which I think we're now finding evidence that, in fact, remote civilizations were quite advanced at a relatively early period. So I always had a love for these things as a child. I went off to college. I studied various subjects, anthropology, geology. I went to Yale University, got my PhD in geology and geophysics, then moved on to Boston University, where I've been teaching ever since. And getting back to the topic, well, in my early years at Boston University, I met a fellow who had been teaching English in Cairo, at American University in Cairo. So he had met, while he was at the American University in Cairo, he called himself, he's now deceased, unfortunately. His name is John Anthony West, or was John Anthony West. He was an Egyptologist who had different ideas about the Sphinx, about ancient Egypt, how old things were, how far back it went, how advanced they were at a relatively early period. He and I met, had discussions, and he invited me to Egypt to study the Sphinx specifically in 1990. So I first went to Egypt in 1990, studied the Sphinx from a geological point of view, and have really never left it at this point. It really reignited my interest in ancient civilizations, and I've been doing that professionally in terms of my research for now the last three decades.
The book is Forgotten Civilizations, and the subtitle, The Role of Solar Outbursts in Our Past and Future. I mean, that's a very provocative title. I'm going to give a little bit of a caveat before we get into that, and then I want you to give us a macro description of kind of what this book is about.
Sounds good.
When people have archaeology, or they listen to archaeologists, I mean, I go through this too. And they say, well, this is millions of years. I mean, you've even hinted at it that, you know, maybe scientists don't really know how old things are. It almost gets droned out. I mean, how does this fit in the Bible? That's something that runs through my mind. Certainly some of our audience does. And they seem to, a lot of time, maybe most of the time in the past, they really haven't hooked up. And so in your book, and we're going to get into it, these forgotten civilizations, much older than biblical times. You know, the Bible, if you're saying somewhere around 6,000 years, if you just went by genealogy, I mean, that's what people kind of guess. And then if you're talking about civilizations 12,000 years old or more, one, either the dating's wrong or the Bible's wrong. That's what people have to think. I look at it completely different. We've had people on like Jordan Maxwell. The Bible does not say that civilization on this planet started with Adam. That's not what it says. In fact, at all. And if people hold that idea, they're going to miss everything you're saying. And to me, I don't think what you're saying is contradicting the Bible at all. To me, it actually accentuates it. It makes it even more fascinating and interesting. In the Bible, God gives the command to Adam and Eve and says to replenish the earth. We've had, experts in ancient Hebrew, what have you. Jordan Maxwell has went over this. Replenish. To redo something, anything is to do it again. Replenish is to plenish it again. So the Bible is telling us God gave command to Adam and Eve to replenish the earth, hinting at, more than hinting, that something came before, that there was maybe a destruction, that they have to repopulate it, however you want to look at it. So that's where this, your work comes in, and that's where I come from, where they dovetail together to me. And so I don't want to get emails where people are going to, yell at me for having somebody on that contradicts the Bible. Cause I personally, just because you say there's a civilization that was 12,000 years old, they got destroyed, that doesn't contradict the Bible to me. So that's my perspective. That's why we had Robert on. And plus his level of expertise is really world class. And this isn't your typical, archaeologist here. He's big time. So we're very happy to have him. I gave you that pretty long caveat, and I think it's important and it sets the stage for your work. Your book, Forgotten Civilizations, kind of give us a macro view of the book, what the overarching, the basic thesis of the book, and then we'll get into some micro things.
Well, actually, it ties right in with what you were saying, and I do want to emphasize or reemphasize what you were saying. I don't believe this is contradicting the Bible whatsoever. And putting it in the perspective that you just commented on about the concept of redoing or replenishing the earth, the overall perspective of Forgotten Civilization really is that there have been earlier civilizations. There have been what I call cycles of civilization. We had, and one can argue about the dating, and I'm not so worried about that right now, but we had an earlier cycle of civilization before this current cycle of civilization. When I say this current cycle of civilization, I am talking about the last 6,000 or so years. But the way I see it is that there was an earlier cycle of civilization, maybe more than one, that was destroyed, and then the earth was replenished again, to use the term that you were just using. So one of those cycles goes back to what I date geologically as the end of the last ice age. It was absolutely essentially destroyed in a huge cataclysm. The earth was, in a sense, not totally wiped clean, but, fairly so. And then it took a very long period of time before civilization reemerged again. If we put it in biblical terms, that reemergence could be exactly what the Bible is talking about. You can correct me if I'm wrong, and then I won't go into other things, but you could correct me if I'm wrong. But if I remember correctly, in the Bible, when they talk about Adam and Eve, etc., there seem to be other people in the background
Certainly. Certainly.
Yeah, so, that's another, which I would say might be the remnants of that earlier civilization. And this is something that Plato talks about, as I mentioned already, with the Atlantis. Other civilizations talk about earlier civilizations. So, for instance, the ancient Egyptians in dynastic times, and we all know dynastic times, and I think that's well accepted. Moses was around during dynastic times, etc. They talked about earlier what we could call primordial civilization that was destroyed cataclysmically, and then that they were a legacy of that, that they reemerged from that. So one of the major themes of my work over the last 30 years and really developing over the last 10 years specifically is that there was this earlier very advanced, very sophisticated civilization that was decimated by natural catastrophes, and humanity essentially was thrown back into what I call the Dark Age, to use analogy with Dark Ages that we know from Western history, you know, the Middle Ages, Dark Ages, Middle Ages, that type of thing, after the fall of the Roman Empire. But there was this extended Dark Age before civilization reemerged 5,000-6,000 years ago. So that's item number one. Item number two I want to mention, and that ties in with the subtitle of my book, The Role of Solar Outbursts in Our Past and Future, what caused this last natural catastrophe? It was the sun. I am absolutely convinced, based on evidence that I've developed and enumerated, and looking at evidence that other people have now been working on, from astrophysicists to archaeologists to historians, that the sun is not stable. The sun is a star. It's a star like any other star, and we now are learning that stars like our sun are not inherently stable over extended periods of time. They undergo solar outbursts, is the general term I use, but solar flares, what's known as solar proton events or solar particle events, coronal mass ejections. We have historical evidence for this. When I say historical evidence, not just historical evidence going back to significant periods in time, but we have even in 1859, which is not that long ago from my perspective, 1859, there was the so-called Carrington event, named after Richard Carrington, the astronomer who saw the first solar flare that initiated the Carrington event. The Carrington event was a astrophysically relatively minor solar outburst, but it was devastating to the electrical systems at the time. In 1859, there were only telegraph lines, essentially. That was the electrical grid of the time, and those were absolutely fried. It burnt down telegraph stations, etc. Now, the 1859 Carrington event we know about, we know it was real, it was observed, we have records for it, but if you go back in time, we have evidence in the geological record, in the archaeological record, in historical annals, that there were similar types of events, but much stronger, much more powerful, and much more devastating to the civilizations of that time. So we now, I think, need to acknowledge that. And then in some cases, there were these earlier civilizations that were really devastated by these events. Before I forget, may I mention one other thing?
Of course,
because
go ahead.
It's biblical, and it ties in with the Great Flood. Now, when we think of the Great Flood, lots of people know about the Great Flood, and the Great Flood is not just in the Judeo-Christian Bible, but it is recorded in numerous legends around the world. When I say legends, I don't mean that in any disrespect, but traditions around the world. What do you get when you have a major solar outburst? You have incredible climate change. You have heating up of the climate. You have literally what's called plasma or electrically charged particles coming down. They would look like huge thunderbolts. When this hits ice, they'll melt it. For instance, at the end of the last ice age, it will change climates. If it hits water, it will evaporate water almost instantaneously. It will put incredible amount of moisture into the atmosphere. The atmosphere can only hold so much moisture, so this comes down as torrential rains, and we have evidence of this in the geological record as well as the historical and archaeological record. Plus, you have rising sea levels. So, to me, getting back to the Bible, when you describe the floods and the deluges and Noah, and I mean, it all ties together in my mind. And to reinforce what you were saying, I don't see this as denying anything at all. It's really corroborating.
Let me back up with something else you said. You talked about the Bible mentioning other people that were there. It absolutely does. If you don't believe me, when Cain killed Abel and God came to Cain and God said he's going to curse Cain and send him out, Cain said, well, don't send me out there. They'll kill me. Well, who
exactly.
are they? Who's he talking about? He
exactly.
says, they'll kill me.
exactly. And see, in my interpretation, these were remnants of that earlier group, that earlier civilization, whatever one wants to call it, that, you know, the few survivors, because what I'm putting together is that in these huge catastrophes that devastated these earlier civilizations, it, frankly, most of the people died, but there were a few survivors, and they were sort of pushed back to
all right,
more primitive state. But yeah, they would have been out there, and Cain, rightfully so, probably was scared of them.
Yeah, certainly. Who knows what they were like, or who knows? You've basically covered about 20,000 years worth of history in about 5 minutes. So I'm not quite sure where. Let's have a focal point of the Sphinx. You're world renowned. That's probably what you're most known for.
I would agree. Yeah.
Okay. You're most known for this. Let's start with the Sphinx in Egypt. That's certainly a center point of any ancient civilization that we know of. It starts and ends with Egypt. So let's start there at the Sphinx. What have we been told about the Sphinx, and what did you change about that dynamic? What did you find out or discover that's different?
Okay, I'll try to put it into a nutshell. The traditional dating for the Sphinx, according to Egyptologists, the conventional Egyptologists, is that the Sphinx was carved de novo. It was carved from scratch from the bedrock on the Giza Plateau. And just so everyone knows who hasn't been there, the Sphinx sits on the Giza Plateau in the shadow of the Great Pyramid. It sits due east of the Second Pyramid, which is almost as large as the Great Pyramid. So that's where it sits in Egypt, at the apex of the Nile Delta. And the Egyptologists say that it was built from scratch, carved from scratch in 2500 BC. I, as I mentioned already, first went to Egypt in 1990 at the invitation of the rogue Egyptologist John Anthony West, who had different ideas, different concepts about how old the Sphinx might be. So he needed a geologist. He wanted a geologist to try to date the Sphinx independently. I went there. Immediately, I noticed two things which are pertinent here. One is that the body of the Sphinx is weathered and eroded by rainfall, by precipitation. This may, in fact, tie in with the huge floods that we were just talking about, with the torrential downpours at the end of the last ice age. In fact, I now believe it does. But be that as it may, the Sphinx is definitely eroded, and other geologists agree with this who have looked at it carefully, by water runoff, rain, precipitation. And I just want to mention it's not Nile flooding from below in historical times. That can be ruled out for a number of reasons. So the issue is, for the last 5,000 or so years, historical times, we have a very good record, both archaeologically, geologically, and from history, from annals, from histories that people wrote down because they were literate for the last 5,000 years, that the Sphinx, where the Sphinx sits, is the edge of the Sahara Desert, and that the Sahara Desert has been bone dry for the last 5,000 years. So if it was heavily eroded and weathered by water, it has to be older. That was number one. Number two,
let me stop you before. I think this is very, very important. I will stop you right there, and let's address this now. You used the word rogue Egyptologist John West. It almost seems like this is more like a religion. It's almost like you're fighting Catholicism, you're Martin Luther fighting Catholicism in the 1500s or something, that people's belief about these things are so ingrained, and if you go against the norm, you're ostracized or something. What you just said about the Sphinx, have the record, it is a desert. How in the world was there erosion and rains and stuff on it within 5,000 years? To me, that is so simple. But yet, if you said that, you probably, John West probably got tons of, you said rogue. He probably got pushed to the side and discredited for what he was saying.
You are absolutely right. You're absolutely right. He was incredibly discredited. People wanted to drive him out of the circles of Egyptology.
Why?
In fact,
why?
Because Okay, so here's, and let me add too that when I speak to geologists about this, they say exactly what you say. It's pretty straightforward and simple. I mean, some geologists have said to me, sort of like, this is such basic geology. This is not very profound from a geological point of view, but the implications are profound for Egyptologists and archaeologists and historians, so profound that they don't want to accept it. And let me
Profound. When you say profound, you mean it messes up their tables? It messes up their idea? What do you mean profound?
It messes up everything they believe because, as they have told me, it has to be impossible because they knew, quote-unquote, knew that Egyptologists and historians knew that civilization does not go back more than about 5,000 years. It could not go back to a remote period before the Sahara Desert. And they just knew that. And to have a sophisticated structure like the Sphinx going back to a much earlier period, that messed up their whole concept of the origin of civilization, et cetera, et cetera. And my feeling is
Robert, what does that say about your profession?
I mean, okay, I have a couple of professions here, so it says different things about different professions. when it comes to Egyptologists and archaeologists, you just used a comment about dogma, and I don't know if you said religion, but essentially they are incredibly, and I hate to say this, but it's the truth. I've found this over decades. They are incredibly dogmatic. It essentially is, in a sense, a, quote, religion. And I don't mean that with any disrespect to true religion, but what most Egyptologists learn in Egyptology 101 from their mentors, they would never go against that. So when you would never go against what you were taught in your first Egyptology class, that means you can never make progress, essentially. And it's very dogmatic. Now let me point out, and again, this is not meant with disrespect, but unlike what many people in sort of the general world think, Egyptology is not a science. It is not a science, and I don't mean that with disrespect. But it is much closer to, should we say, aesthetic appreciation, art history, linguistics is heavily involved with it, that type of thing.
There's the music. We got one break. It'll be a short break, a few minutes, and then we'll be back more with Robert Schock. Excuse me. Your name is spelled very different.
I know.
Spell
it's
your name
hard to pronounce if you're not used to it.
S-C-H-O-C-H. RobertSCHOCH.com is his website. You're listening to the Power Hour. Stay tuned. Don't miss this. This is extremely interesting. Be right back.
Hi, this is Jay at the Power Mall. I thought I would discuss an item that's very valuable to my personal health and well-being. That product is called Curcumin X4000. Its potent antioxidant properties have been shown to decrease swelling and allow us to enjoy our golden years. Take control over your health today, guys. Order Curcumin by calling 877-817-9829 or order at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Oxygen. It's nature's oldest therapy and plays an essential role in destroying viruses, bacteria, mold, yeast, and fungus, and keeping the human body healthy and strong. Now, you can give your body and your immune system a mega boost of disease-fighting oxygen with all-natural Oxy-C. With so many people now leading a sedentary indoor lifestyle, most are in a chronic state of oxygen deprivation, which sets up a perfect environment for disease, general fatigue, and a host of other symptoms. Oxy-C is yours in simple, convenient capsules. Nothing to mix, nothing to hassle with. Take it with juice or water anytime. Feel a cold or flu approaching? Have no energy or spark anymore? Try all-natural Oxy-C and prepare to be amazed. Oxy-C is only available from New Earth Health Solutions at Rinse.com. Look for the New Earth banner at Rinse.com.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams Probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
If you've been listening to this program for any length of time, you'll know that Fukushima, the greatest calamity in history, has now, as I've been warning since 3/11, killed off virtually the whole North Pacific Ocean and especially up and down the entire West Coast. The radiation is migrating inland and is moving across the entire country. There's only one proven defender to radiation exposure, the brilliant Chernobyl-proven discovery of Dr. Michael Kiriak, which combines the four most potent and powerful algaes on the planet, imported to the U.S. and known as Bio's Superfood. I've taken Bio's Superfood every day for several years now and want you to do the same for your sake and the health and safety of your family and loved ones. Take the banner at the top of Rents.com and prepare to learn how to save your life.
Hi, this is Catherine at the Power Hour. The Power Mall began when Joyce Riley discovered an all-natural soap that heals skin issues and can replace your bathing, laundry, and household cleaning products. That soap is Miracle 2 and is made from natural minerals and coconut extract with no added fragrances or colors and is naturally concentrated and biodegradable. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today. You'll learn why so many people say, it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
With dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Numana Food Storage is nutritious, is GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high-fructose corn syrup, has no chemicals, preservatives, or soy. And Numana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. Call Jay at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or order online at thepowermall.com.
America made just for you. Food stores I love to eat. Yum!
Welcome back to the Power Hour. Here's where we make you aware of the specials at the Power Mall. And thank you so much for your ladies and gentlemen, you've really supported us. We've made a real strong commitment to you. We've stocked our shelves. You get it quick. We really want to earn your business. We deserve your business. You deserve these products over at the Power Mall. REM Sleep, we just had a great interview from Dr. Matthew Pfeiffer. That's on sale over at the Power Mall. It's a very inexpensive way to fix a lot of health problems, or possibly fix a lot of health problems, and really change the way you feel. When I say health problems, I mean the way you feel. Do you feel draggy? Do you feel tired? Do you feel a little depressed? Do you feel a little down? It may be your sleep, ladies and gentlemen. Have you ever thought of that? I mean, it affects everything. So check that out. Try it. Matthew says about 85% of the people, it's designed to help about 85% of the people. There's about 10-15% that it normally doesn't help as far as sleep. It still gives you nutrition, so it'll still help you that way, but maybe not help your sleep. So consider that. But 85% of the people are helped. A lot of people, you guys have really latched onto this product. It's one of the best-selling new products that we've added over the last 2, 3, 4 years. Happy Bodies, the Detox Cocktail Mix, the Phosphatidylcholine, Alpha-Lipoic Acid, the Vitamin E. If you're not detoxing with these products, then how are you? You need to ask yourself that, because detoxing is essential to your health. Strauss Heart Drops, REM Sleep, you can also do auto-ship on. Please sign up for auto-ship if you're interested. We're gonna meet you halfway on this. We're gonna give you a discount on the price. We're gonna give you free shipping. We're gonna lock in that. And then so you'll never pay less than that, and it gets delivered to your house every month or every 2 months. You pick. You want it delivered every month or every other month. And if there's other things you want delivered with that, maybe you can talk to Jay about that at the same time. We can probably, put other things on auto ship for that time. We can deliver them in the same package. So, talk to Jay about that. I don't know exactly what we can do, but I'm sure we can do something. Iron Earth, 10% off of Iron Earth. And we do have some discontinued items that we have for big sales. Zeotrex, cleanse out heavy metals. The Prostrex for your prostate. Chaka Charge Tea. It's a great tea. Many health benefits from the chaga mushroom, Intracal, Topperson Sports Cream, Silver Shield, the bedding spray, dogging, bedding spray. I use this in the bathroom. I use it for the dogs. Well, I should say Tristan uses it for the dogs. Tristan sprays it on me too when she really wants to make a point. but that's another story altogether. Willard water, the dark and the clear. We do have some of those. And, of course, new customers, if you haven't ordered for a while or you're new, we're getting a lot of new listeners. We think we deserve your business. You can use the coupon code FIRST10, 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 and you get a discount off your first purchases. And, of course, if you want to listen to the show by phone, 701-300-5252, 701-300-5252. Check that out. Also, podcast by phone from TalkStream Live. You can go to TalkStreamLive.com. Put the Power Hour in the top and you can listen there, or thepowerhour.com, listen live. 641-793-9840. 641-793-9840. These are some numbers you should know. You should know about. And of course, the Power Mall, 877-817-9829. Thank you so much for your purchases, your support, your donations. We're here because of you, having great guests like Robert Schock, really a revolutionary mind, changing the way people think about the past, which certainly affects our present and future, no question. And we're getting back to Robert, the name of his book. And you get this book, I imagine you can get it at Amazon or pretty much wherever books are sold and on your website, Robert?
Exactly. Go to my website. I think you've mentioned that before, but if you don't mind, I'll mention it again, which is Robert Schock, RobertSchock.com, and people can find links to the book and how to purchase the book. Yeah, Amazon is Amazon. You know, most people buy on Amazon nowadays.
Well, I hope they buy from you and don't support Amazon. We're trying to get Amazon's taking over things, and they take a lot of money out of your books.
It's a horrible problem.
It is.
Problem.
Buy from Robert if you can help it, ladies and gentlemen. Forgotten Civilization, the Role of Solar Outbursts in Our Past and Future. Very important. We've really only scratched the surface. I hope in the future that you come on again in a few months, Robert. I would love to have you on.
It'll be my pleasure. My pleasure.
Oh, okay. We're talking about the Sphinx and how Egyptology is not a science at all, but it's almost like a pseudo-religion art history class, almost, or something to that effect. I mean, I'm being a little facetious, but not really.
I've
been fascinated by these documentaries, especially on Netflix. There's a lot of them about the Bible and about Egyptology and about how, well, Moses is impossible because the times don't fit and all and all I hear about from these Egyptologists is how the Bible and their history, their view of things don't fit together. Why are they so hell-bent on, it's almost like they have a vendetta against any biblical history at all. Do you feel that? Do you see that? Or is it just me making up things in my head?
No, I think there's some reality to that. There's very much, I think, I would say there's some real problems when it comes to such things. And part of it is, let me just say this, and I don't mean to be disrespectful, but I believe that a lot of Egyptologists in particular may have an inferiority complex. And what I mean by that is that they sort of want to be a science, they want to be taken seriously, they're not quite a science though, they are very dogmatic. It's a weird combination of things, and in many cases I sense that they feel that if they're supporting, quote, the Bible or religion, somehow that detracts from them in the eyes of other people, like, you know, academics who they want to gain respect from. Now, I'm being very broad-brushed here,
yes,
but I do
sure.
think there's some truth to what I'm saying. Also, Egyptology in many ways comes out of the late 18th and early 19th century, when there was a separation of religion and science, and they were trying to be on the scientific side. I just want to comment that I think this separation of religion and science is really destructive in many ways. It's a very modern concept when you go back to the ancients, and I think this is one of the lessons we can learn from ancient peoples, is that they did not make the big distinction between science and religion. They actually saw them as being compatible. compatible with each other, and I think there's a real value in that. The ancient Egyptians, to translate it into modern terms, actually talked about what we could translate or consider sacred science. More or less, the two can be combined together, and they support each other. So there's a lot of different, I think, agendas involved and whatnot, but the getting back to Egyptology, in many ways it came out of the late 18th, early 19th century, the quote Enlightenment, which many people could now argue was not quite so enlightening, but in fact made maybe dichotomies that were productive in some ways, but counterproductive in other ways. And they've always been trying to gain status and prestige, and in some cases that means denying certain things in their minds.
I would have to imagine, you please comment to this, that as you go back historically, and you're talking about thousands of years trying to make determinations and try to understand what happened, try to determine ages of things, what have all that. I would imagine as you go further back, one of your greatest sources of confirmation, kind of to research, probably is things like the Bible or other ancient texts. It probably becomes extremely valuable to somebody like you.
Oh, it becomes incredibly valuable. And I'm very much, my guiding principle is to look at evidence. And evidence to support one hypothesis or another hypothesis, to support one theory or another, and you need to have the evidence. This is my guiding principle. And you need to have the evidence. And if the evidence is not supporting the prevailing theory or the prevailing hypothesis, just like the evidence, and there's a huge amount of evidence now that I discuss in my book and other papers, that the Sphinx goes back to a much earlier period, the origins of the Sphinx goes back to a much earlier period, I believe you have to go by the evidence, and you don't ignore evidence. Now, the evidence can be physical. I'm a geologist, and I look at physical evidence. I look at rocks. I look at weathering. I look at stratigraphy. I'm trained in archaeology. I look at the physical evidence of archaeology. But I actually, and this is partly my background perhaps, I actually have a degree in anthropology as well. I'm very interested in anthropology, sociology, ethnography. Where I'm going with this is that I take the traditions of ancient people seriously, whether it's the Bible or other ancient texts and writings, the quote mythologies, unquote. What I'm finding is that any of these traditions, it seems invariable that they have a core of truth, that there is something to them, and a lot of times a lot more something than anyone has imagined in the past.
Certainly the scientific community has realized up to this point. I'm cutting you off because we only got about probably 14 minutes, and there's a lot to cover here. We're going to have you on again, but I want to complete the ideas in your book. Let's go back to the Sphinx. It's much older than 5,000 years. I believe the head is a different head. It was carved from something different.
The head is a different head. Actually, it's really important, if I could just make this one comment. The head is too small for the body, and that's something I noticed on my very first trip to Egypt in 1990. Very simple explanation for it. The body was heavily weathered and eroded by the rainfall, et cetera, that predates the Sahara. So was the head. I have no doubt that it was heavily weathered and eroded. Instead of trying to patch up the head, what they did in dynastic times was they actually recarved it. Now, when you carve something from an older structure, you can only take away rock, so it ended up with the head being too small. And it's very evident that it's a dynastic head. So the head is not the original head. We actually know now what the original head was, and this is based on analyses that I've done with my colleagues, Manu Saifzadeh, Dr. Manu Saifzadeh. We now know that the head was originally a female lion, and the Sphinx was a lioness. It was actually a lioness. That's based on textual evidence from the earliest dynastic times that talk about the Sphinx being a female lioness.
Wow. And what significance would that be to the culture? And what time frame? Are we talking 12,000 years, do you think? Where are we at?
Well, we're talking definitely that it was well before 5,000 years ago. And yes, I think that probably 12,000 years ago, before the end of the last ice age, we were talking about, or we had on the Giza Plateau, a lioness. This lioness, instead of the Sphinx that we see today, and she was sitting there facing due east. And interestingly, something that is very important to the ancients, and we see this in all of the ancient scriptures and writings, and there's actually allusions to it in the Bible also, is the precessional ages. Right now we're in the age of Pisces going into the age of Aquarius, but this changes over time. 12,000 years ago, it was the age of Leo. And on the vernal equinox, the Sphinx on the ground, and I shouldn't say Sphinx, I should say the lioness now, the lioness on the ground on the vernal equinox faced Leo rising on the horizon. So you had the female on the ground, on the earth, attached to the earth, facing her consort, I would say, in the sky, the male lion Leo. So you have the female lioness and the male lion.
All right, I'm going to ask a big, huge question. You got about 10 minutes to wrap this. Dave from New York is holding. He has a question. Dave, just continue to hold. We're going to try to get you at the end. Let's finish this thought. And this is kind of the crux of your book, what you're saying. And you answer it anyway. You got about, 5 to 10 minutes to answer this, or at least give us a taste of it. I know it may be impossible to do. Okay. You mentioned the precession of astrology.
The precession of the equinoxes.
Okay, so these astrological signs, zodiac is kind of a counterfeit of this. The astrology is kind of a bastardization, for if any better word.
Yeah, I would say astrology, bastardization.
There's no question that in the stars, that's different ages over different things. That's where these signs come from. The Bible even alludes to some of these, the water carrier, Aquarius, mm-hmm. the fish, all these things. Anyway, in your research, one of the most striking things about this book is the concept, and you mentioned the ice age, you mentioned coming out of the ice age, you mentioned destruction. It's this idea of cyclical processions through the time, and that they do go in cycles, and that they do predict the past, then is prologue to the future, and is then predicting of the present and the future. Mm-hmm. What can you tell us about all that, what you have seen, your research, what the past was, what these cycles mean, and what they mean for us right now? Are they repeating? That's my question for you.
Well, I hate to be negative, but they are repeating. They are absolutely repeating. There's no doubt in my mind. This is a basic lesson from geology. I'm a geologist, that what happened in the past, as you said, is prologue for the future. More than that, or further tie in with the specific subject at hand, the precessional cycle, the cycle as I'm reconstructing it for solar events, solar activity, should we say, going from periods of agitation of the sun being incredibly to then going through periods of fairly mild solar activity to calm in the sun, and then going back to periods of activity, incredible activity. That cycle is around 12,000 years. It really is around 12,000 years. And we have in the geological record from things like ice cores and sediment cores and isotopes that record the activity of the sun, without going into great detail why that is, it has to do with certain isotopes are created when the sun is more active versus less active. From historical records, we have evidence that the sun was incredibly active at the end of the last ice age. It went through a period of calm for thousands of years, what my wife, Catherine Ulysses, and I have named the solar-induced dark age. It's sort of ironic that the sun, solar sun, can induce a dark age, but that's exactly what happened, because it when the sun has incredible outbursts, it throws back civilization. It causes civilization to be devastated, as well as killing off animals on Earth, as well as the torrential rains and the floods that we mentioned before, etc. So this is a cycle that occurs. I believe it occurs with about a 12,000-year periodicity, and we are seeing in the present day, I am convinced, more agitation, more activity from the sun. I mentioned before the Carrington event, which was in 1859. I think that is just the start of, or a forerunner, should we say, of increased activity and agitation of the sun. And it's very interesting right now that the sun has been very active, and this ties in with global climate change and whatnot, which, in my opinion, and I talk about this in the book, is primarily natural, not anthropogenic, not caused by humans. That's a long, complicated problem we could talk about later. But you've had all these climate changes in the past that correlate with solar activity. The same thing is happening today. And we have the 1859 Carrington event, which I think is just a warning shot, if you would.
Of the beginning, introduction, so to speak.
Agitated. And what's interesting, too, is some people will tell you right now, oh, the sun is getting quiet. It's going into a time of
solar minimum. I've heard solar
minimum. Exactly. But what we find in the record, historical and geologic record, is that when the sun is destabilized, unstable, and has a lot of activity, it goes through periods of incredible activity, then it goes through these minimums when it seems like it's not active at all, and then overnight, literally, all of a sudden, it becomes incredibly active again. So actually, the 1859 Carrington event occurred during a period when the sun didn't seem to be doing much otherwise, and then all of a sudden it explodes. So it can be very misleading to look at, you know, just very short-term, few months or years, versus looking at the bigger picture. And I hate to say this, but the sun is really agitated.
Okay. All right. Let me ask you again. We're short on time, just quick as you can. So in that 12,000-year cycle, obviously it's probably not exact, but we're kind of in that. See, where are we in that? Are we to the end of the 12,000-year cycle? Are we?
Yeah. We're at the end of the 12,000-year cycle, and the sun is becoming active again. That's exactly what I'm saying. The sun is showing all the signs that it did when it exploded, essentially. It had a huge outburst at the end of the last ice age. I will be, because time is short, I'll be blunt. It could happen tomorrow. It could happen next year. It could happen in the next few years. I'm not predicting. I'm not someone who's like trying to sell a product and say, oh, you have to do this and that. I'm just giving you the science. The sun is unstable at the moment, in my assessment, based on the evidence, and we could have a major solar outburst. And I want to mention one other thing very quickly. We are incredibly vulnerable today because our society is based on electronics, electricity, grid systems. Our society is basically, you can't imagine a society that would be more vulnerable to a solar outburst than the society we have today.
Well, you're not selling, I mean, you have your book, and the book is, this is a fantastic book, ladies and gentlemen. Robert Schock, SCHOCH.com, RobertSchock.com, Forgotten Civilization, The Role of Solar Outbursts in Our Past and Future. We've really only scratched the surface. I hope you are incredibly intrigued about this topic because this book is fantastic. Where was I going to go with this? How should I finish? We do have Dave in New York. Maybe what you are selling, you're selling food storage. I have a family started a food storage company. You're selling preparedness, water filters. I mean, it's kind of time to batten down the hatches a little bit,
in a way it is. But no, what I'm saying is I'm not personally selling anything. I don't have
I understand. I'm just joking with you, Robert.
I'm not part of any company or anything like that. And also, a lot of it, honestly, when it happens, I hate to say it that way, but when we have another major solar outburst, I think a lot of it, probably the best preparation, I mean this seriously, is sort of spiritual, philosophical, having community, people around you. I mean, if you're in the wrong place at the wrong time, you can have all the food stored up that you can imagine, and you're just hit and zapped and incinerated.
It's not really good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We do have a caller. Let's try to get a caller in the last couple of minutes. Quick. Dave in New York, if you're still there, quickly, you're live on the air with Robert.
I am. Testing. Can you hear me?
Yes, absolutely. Testing. Go ahead. Quick with the question, Dave.
Okay. You're in. Yeah. Well, the shock troops are here. You know, I agree with him, for the most part. And, you know, so many pitchers got, you know, sitting on the earth going around in the 24-hour day. He says in the Bible that a day is as a thousand years and a thousand years as a day. So don't get all hooked up on certain time elements. And the fact, I don't think this is the first go-around by any means, but I do feel it is the last go-around. And, you know, we would be heretics to say this, you know, and be burned at the stake. I'd rather burn my stake, you know, back in the old days, but I have no problem coming out with the truth when the truth is the truth. I think the earth used to be like a terrarium, basically, and whether it was a solar flare or a meteorite that broke through, the oxygen trapped in the amber, you know, they tested it from what it was, and it used to be much greater, and if the earth was a terrarium, it was all paradise around here. People were 40 feet tall, trees were 170 feet tall, whatever. Everything was bigger back then, but the dinosaurs didn't have developed enough lungs to survive all of that. But at any rate, you know, I agree with it, one way or the other.
Well, thank you.
The first time.
Dave, thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
We got about a minute or so left, Dr. Schock. It's a real pleasure to meet you. I look forward to having you on in 2 or 3 months. We'll talk about another aspect of this. Last thought is yours. The book is Forgotten Civilization, The Role of Solar Outbursts in Our Past and Future. Last thought is yours, my friend.
Oh, well, I just hope everyone will take this seriously, because I think something that we have to do is really face these issues and realize that ancient civilizations are not just, quote, dead and interesting in their own right, but they reflect and have a real message for us today.
Fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, as always, it's a pleasure. We've got a great broadcast for you tomorrow. Joel Scal, again, usually Thursday I take off. I'm going to be here this Thursday because Joel Skousen is going to be on. So make sure you listen Thursday to hear Joel Skousen, and then we'll go from there. God bless you. We want you happy. We want you healthy. We want you successful and free, just as God intended you to be. Dr. Schock, it's a pleasure to meet you, my friend. God bless you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you for your support. See you, Todd. Thank you.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Dr. Joe Schneller.
The efficacy that we're looking for, that we're going to prove, is that carnivora wakes up this immune system and makes it dominant.
I highly recommend that you get started right away using carnivora, because it really will help you. Just follow the directions as the company gives them to you. And I just want everybody to know that there's been no one paid to do this. I'm doing this on my own because I care about everybody and want to see healthy people.
My husband has recovered tremendously after the physician suggested that he start taking carnivora. When he was doing so well, I decided to start taking it as well, and we're both so pleased. pleased to be able to feel healthy again.
Hello, folks. Richard Ostro of Carnivora Research International here. Visit carnivora.com or call 1-866-VENUS-FLY. That's carnivora.com or 1-866-VENUS-FLY.